All right, everybody, welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. Have a couple of guys joining me today. We have Dark Knight Nation, happy enough to join us to give us his views on Dark Knight's death metal. And Manny's joining me as well. So this should be a really good episode. I think we're all going to have different things to say about death metal. I don't think there's going to be a consensus necessarily, but I'm curious if I can shed some light, because I have a feeling that I'm going to take a more positive spin on it than they are. We'll see if I can. I don't expect to change their minds by any means, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. So say hi to everybody, Dark Knight, and let them know kind of what you do and where you can be found.
Sure. Yeah, man. Well, first of all, thanks for inviting me on. It's always a good time. And then, you know, I always enjoy a good rant, so I'm here for it. But yeah, I run the channel Dark Knight Nation on YouTube. Basically, my channel is structured around breaking down, discussing, and analyzing comic books with an almost kind of surgical perspective. We do every week a review of a book that is either well lauded or something that we're looking forward to as a kind of comic book culture. And I'll kind of break it down for both story, narrative, and art, and figure out what the creators are doing that works, what they're doing that's not working, and make predictions, so on and so forth. And then I also do a weekly show with members of the comic book community called Let's Talk Comics. And that's a live stream where you'll see folks like Jace, who has appeared on the channel a couple times, and other members in the community just discussing something about the comic book medium, the industry, the kind of craft of it all, from varying degrees of perspective. So, for example, my last conversation was on why the world needs Superman. So although we can have kind of evergreen discussions like that, we'll sometimes go down to specifics, like talking about you know, how obviously the world pandemic has affected the comic book industry, so on and so forth. Or the last time you would have seen Jace on the channel, we did like a state of the comic book industry. So it has a full range of topics. And yeah, if you guys want to go check that out, we'd be glad to see you over on the channel.
Awesome. Yeah, very much worth your time to go and not only get some reviews and some perspective on topical issues of comics from a more technical aspect of what we do here on the Comic Source, but also it's just a lot of fun and, you know, exploring history and hearing some other opinions. So, all right, well, let's dive into Dark Knight's Death Metal 1, and we'll get each of our overall impressions of what we kind of thought about it. We'll start with you, Manny. What did you think of the nice shiny issue you're holding there?
It was just so cluttered, unnecessarily complicated. I understand what you're trying to do here. You're trying to his prog rebirth and trying to bring in so much, you know, so much more and make it so impactful because you've you know, everything that's gone down with Year of the Villain and then Perpetua, and now it's led to this. But I opened my book and it's pretty much a strange continuation of what they did previously. And what it's more the Batman Who Laughs, which I know how much you love the Joker, Dave. I know how much you love just the oversaturation of the Crown Prince of Crime, who can now be found in another new storyline and also the Batman book. And so, you know, I guess you're trying to make sense of, you know, everything, everything matters, I guess. That's what the term that was used, like all the stories and everything. And that it's just, I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me.
All right. Fair enough. All right. What about you, Knight? What were your thoughts?
Oh, baby. Where do I start? So Dark Knight's Death Metal might be my least favorite thing I've ever read from Scott Snyder. I thought, like Manny, I thought it was an absolute mess. I also didn't need Scott Snyder's characters to explicitly tell me that every story matters. I think that's kind of weak. And he does this thing throughout the story where he tells you that this matters. He tells you to be scared. He tells you to do this. Scott, if you're listening, stop telling me. Show me. It's a comic book. To me, it just comes off as kind of sloppy. We end up wasting a lot of time, you know, making things I think a little bit too hammy, a little bit too corny. But granted, you know, I'm not much of a comedy guy in my like event comics, so I don't know. But I honestly feel like on every aspect of the writing, it does fall short. We're constantly being told that something is important. You know, we're told that we're supposed to care about Wonder Woman. Frankly, bro, I care more about Black Lantern Batman, because that was the most interesting thing in this entire issue. So, you know, as a writer, it's his responsibility to convince us of his world, convince us of the stakes of the drama, and just telling us doesn't make that happen. And there was a lot of telling in this issue. We had that double page splash where he's completely overriding, you know, parts of his Justice League run to try to make sense of everything, you know, between the original Metal, No Justice, Justice League, and now this. You know, we've had more issues to start to unravel this massive, high-scale plot than I think it's ever been worth. And the fact that it's taken this long and we've still kind of not paid off a lot of those kind of larger elements is frustrating. I mean, how far are we going into spoilers in this? Can we spoil some stuff?
Yeah, I mean, everybody at this point should know that we're going to be, you know, breaking this down and spoilers, not just for this, but for the larger narrative of the DC universe, you know, as sure. It's been for the last year.
So aside from a super cool Black Lantern Batman that we got to see for 2 seconds, Batman Who Laughs is finally dead, which is great. I'm tired of him. I'm so tired of him. And I think it's kind of, he was a character that was just becoming so overused and oversaturated, like, you know, Manny had pointed up about the Joker, but it's been in such a concentrated amount, you know, like the Batman Who Laughs has existed for 2 years, and I've probably seen him in books more than like almost any other character that doesn't have their own eponymous title in the line. So, you know, there, and I'll give Snyder his credit. There are a lot of great concepts in this book. There are a lot of things that I really wish I could love about this book, but it is ultimately brought to its knees by the utter lack, frankly, of craftsmanship and of execution, which is disappointing, you know, because Snyder, to me, at one point was my favorite writer in comics. So it's definitely, it's not pleasant for me to say these things that I'm saying, but I don't know, man, maybe you'll see something that I didn't and change my mind, even though I kind of doubt that. I'm curious, man, what you have to say about this book.
Well, I mean, it certainly isn't a 10 out of 10. You know, like you were saying before we started recording, how some people just absolutely adored it. They were giving it, you know, glowing reviews. You know, this is not that. I know Scott personally, and he, you know, I know he never sets out to, you know, make a bad comic or create a bad story. And the guy loves his fans. He loves these characters. He loves the DC universe. But he is or has become this great idea guy, kind of like the way Robert Kirkman is a great idea guy. But I feel like Scott's kind of fallen in that same trap and going down the same path that Kirkman has, where he's got these great big ideas that are so grandiose and so big that a comic book may not be the best forum, the best medium to tell these stories in, because you are so limited in the amount of real estate that you have. You're limited by, you know, the monthly format. What can you fit in the page? What can be explained? So, you know, I kind of feel like, in a way, this issue suffers from what Dark Knight Metal, you know, the original Dark Knight Metal series suffered from, which is Scott's got all these great ideas, but if you don't have Scott sort of holding your hand and pointing out, hey, so this means this, and kind of expanding on those ideas and explaining it to you, then you lose something. It like Manny said, it gets choppy and you're missing out on some stuff. Now, all that being said, when Wonder Woman takes that chainsaw and F's up the Batman Who Laughs, I was grinning from ear to ear. I hate that character. I think he is lazy. I think everything about him is lazy. I think it's the worst. You're bringing the worst aspects of Batman as a character, like what doesn't work it isn't well explained. We've had this conversation before. I can't remember which one of you. I may have had the conversation with both of you about how, you know, Batman is supposedly the, you know, the second best at everything, and you know, you're playing into that and how it kind of cheapens the character. You're taking the worst aspects of Batman as a character, I think what makes him the least compelling, and you're taking the worst aspects of the Joker, what people can't seem to get enough of with this modern day Joker, you know, the bloodthirstiness, the murder, the outright psychopathy. You're taking those and you're melding them together into a character. It just doesn't work for me. And that's completely leaving unknown what Knight was saying about how overused this guy's been. If any character has been overused in the last 2-3 years more than the Joker, it's the Batman Who Laughs. Like, I can't wait for this guy to just go away. And so, it's comics, so who knows if he's really actually dead. Probably not. He'll probably come back in some shape or form. But to see Wonder Woman chainsaw his ass was great. Like, I loved it. That was by far and away my favorite moment in the comic. And all I could think was, yeah, finally, get this guy out of here. It was great. So I know that Scott has said that this is a Wonder Woman story. Clearly, we're seeing that from the first issue. Are there problems with it? Yes. And sometimes I wonder, Knight, if your education and the perspective you bring to comics sometimes doesn't allow you to see the forest for the trees. Like, it's, you know, you're cursed that when you read stuff, you're analyzing it from that, you know, writer perspective. I come at it from a different point of view. I'm looking for entertainment value, but I would be lying if I said that I didn't also look at it through the lens of, I've been reading comics for 40 years, so there's always some technical aspect that's going to, you know, come to me, or that I'm going to see it through, just based on knowing what's worked in the past. What are people going to remember? What's going to have a lasting impression, and what's going to be swept under the rug by the next DC reboot or DC crisis? So I recognize that there are aspects of it that don't work and that are clunky, but there is something else at play here that I think is affecting this comic, and I'm sure that it had edits and changes right up to the last minute. So if you're to look at it, Manny, from the perspective of, there is no more 5G, Doomsday Clock got changed from a series that should have taken a year to a series that took more than 2 years because it got switched to bi-monthly, and then there were delays on top of that. So, you know, Doomsday Clock was supposed to follow right on the heels of Rebirth and keep the momentum that Rebirth brought back to the DC line. It was supposed to keep that going. And based on the end of that, what might have happened could have been completely different. But then we were all headed toward this 5G thing, which, from what I've heard Scott Snyder say, they were trying to keep Death Metal away from the larger portion of the DC universe, and it was just basically the end of the storyline that Snyder had started in Justice League and then went through You're the Villain, Hell Arisen. Now we're being told that this really is everything. Just like when we were at Long Beach in January, Manny, Didio was saying, you know, everything matters. Knight talked about how Scott Snyder beats us over the head in this debut issue of Death Metal, that everything matters. Every story happened. This all of a sudden becomes the backbone of DC Universe going forward rather than 5G. So I think there, some of the problems we see in this issue, I think, are because they're trying to kind of change this on the fly. What are your thoughts about that, Manny?
Yeah, I mean, because then you start thinking about all of the, whether it was as of a timing or X reasons, because first there's the whole the Doomsday Clock thing, how far back we still have to wait for the three Jokers, this storyline that was just supposed to just be part of that Justice League kind of story, and then the whole idea of 5G getting scrapped, which I'm glad they did, because I just don't want taking the generation, just because, I mean, you need to have your Justice League as they are. If you wanna do something else, then write a different book for it. Let Bendis do it. or something. So now you take all of that, the whole Doomsday Clock, which by the time it was set and done, you almost had to read all over again because it's been so long since issue one came out. I mean, it's not their fault that the industry kind of got shut down for a couple of months and you weren't necessarily getting some of the issues and some of the stories. So it even feels like a little bit more time has passed. But now you take all of that and that it goes even Rebirth, pre-Rebirth, Doomsday Clock, and you're like, yeah, all of that right here in this book, it all matters. Like wait, like that's a long time ago. What? It's overwhelming, but at the same time, it kind of reminds you of all the little faults they've had throughout the course of the last few years.
Yeah, I guess from my perspective, I'm willing to kind of, I don't know, forgive a little bit of the choppiness because of that reason. Like, I know that originally this was supposed to come out, the first issue of Death Metal was supposed to come out the month following the last issue of Snyder's Justice League run. So, you know, it should have happened a lot faster, but because of other things, it got delayed. And then obviously the pandemic, it got pushed back even more. So, like, I totally get that. But, you know, you had Didio, who basically was the one that was championing 5G, removed as publisher for reasons. And now all of a sudden 5G, they kept working on it for a while and then decided, hey, we're just going to throw it all out. But you still have stories, you still have issues, you still have narratives and storylines that reference 5G and what was it going to be like. I in a way, I'm glad 5G is not going to happen because I agree with Manny. I wasn't a fan of seeing John aged up. I wasn't a fan of having him replace Superman. Not a fan of having Luke Fox replace Bruce Wayne and whoever they were going to have replace Wonder Woman. Now, I'm all for new characters, but keep my classics in place.
Right.
Now, but now that we know that there was material produced, I am curious to see, like, maybe it would have worked. And I do like the tidbits that were dropped in, especially in Flash Forward. I think it did make sense what they were preaching about how they were going to sort of fix the timelines. And a lot of it goes back to what Johns did in the final issue of Doomsday Clock, where he's saying, basically, Superman is at the center of everything, and maybe it's just because, you know, Superman's my favorite character. But every different timeline, every divergence was, you know, when something changed for Superman. When Superman was at a crossroads, it created, you know, in this other timeline. And all these timelines still work because they all have a Superman. And I kind of liked that idea. I thought, okay, well, you know, this can work. And now what we're seeing is, you know, Knight referenced that double page spread where Wally is kind of giving us, the readers, a recap of what's gone on over the last year, 2 years of DC Comics under the guise of kind of explaining to Diana. And yeah, some of the things have changed. Knight mentioned himself that some of the things are tweaked a little bit, or we're seeing them through, you know, Wally's perspective. And some of it has to do probably with timelines and publishing schedules and the fact that 5G is not going to happen anymore. And yeah, it does make it a little messy, but I got to give them credit for at least trying to make it make sense. Like, from your perspective, Knight, you know, if you put aside the, you know, the technical aspects of just lazy writing, you give them a break at all for these kind of circumstances that they're being forced to deal with?
I would have if he didn't have like 4 months of COVID break, because that gave so much time for them to kind of restructure. And that's very clear that that's what they did, because now whatever 5G was, even if we get something called 5G after Death Metal, is not what it's going to be. 5G is going to be whatever Scott Snyder wants after Death Metal. And I think that that's been made fairly evident. So clearly there's been some very certain shifts. So, you know, I like the idea, right, that every story matters, that all this continuity has a place in the big overarching story of the DC universe. Do I think Snyder's the guy to do it? No, honestly, no. I actually have a firm belief that if editors and DC Publishing was smarter in terms of what they wanted to put out for quality, I feel like they should have had Scott Snyder spearhead the new era of Vertigo instead of giving him Justice League. I think that's way more in his skill set. I think he has big ideas for Justice League, but big ideas don't matter if you can't execute. So do I like the idea that we're going to have a post DC universe where everything matters? Yeah, absolutely. To be honest with you, though, after Superman Reborn, I already felt like we pretty much had that. And especially after Doomsday Clock, but you know, we'll see what really specific intricacies are changed after Dark Knight's Death Metal. But there's also too something that I kind of wanted to unpack, if I may, that you had mentioned about like the comic book format limiting Snyder, and where I think that the comic book format can be a time crunch. I think that Snyder has had plenty of time to unravel his story. You know, most. You know, like, I mean, just by the fact that he's been unraveling this same story for about 3 years now, between Metal, all of those one shots and tie-ins, No Justice, Justice League, and now this. It's like, I stop giving the writer the excuse of the format when they're literally given all the time in the world. He had every opportunity to restructure his story in a way that felt like we were paying off various plot points or setting up new ones in a really kind of digestible and manageable way. And he didn't. So if it were maybe, you know, say DC, say he was a new writer, didn't have a lot of clout. DC said, you have 6 issues to tell this epic. Sure. Yeah. I would totally give him the benefit of the doubt, but between Metal, the tie-ins, Justice League, this, it's like 80 something issues of comics. And that is a hell of a long time, especially for a veteran comic book writer who knows the format intimately well. He should have a firm understanding of how to shape his story around what he's working in. Aside from the fact that if anybody watches my review of Death Metal, one of the things that genuinely pissed me off is that we get charged for this higher page count, and 3 or 4 of the pages in Death Metal were these random still images with a dirty blue filter over them with nothing on them. One of them had one of those Batman anecdotes that Scott Snyder likes to use about Thomas Wayne telling Bruce something, but the rest of them literally had nothing on it. Aside from the fact that I think it's just not ethically good because we're paying for those pages, those were extra pages that he could have used to fix some of the issues regarding pacing. Fix some of the issues regarding the rollout of exposition, maybe not make it so sloppy. So I really, as much as I want to cut the guy a break, I can't, man. He's been given all the time in the world and it shows. But, you know, at the end of the day, if we get a DC universe where every story matters, and if the news is, or if the rumors are true that at this point, DC is going to be focusing a little bit more on like character-based stories, I'm in. I'm all in on that, man. Like, as DC has kind of not been in my favor over these last 2 years, I would kind of prefer, you know, a little bit of time where they put the right people on these books. They let them do these very character oriented runs for a little bit. We get a little bit down and dirty and intimate with why these characters are important, rather than just doing something big and crazy that, you know, kind of ultimately contradicts many other things going on. You know, the DC has had, you know, like 4 different fiefdoms running at once that have these big, that just have such incredible control over a wide scope of the DC universe. And not only is it confusing, but they're contradictory, right? Like, we had Tom King's camp in Heroes in Crisis. We had Bendis doing Superman, Event Leviathan, and Legion. We had Snyder doing Metal and Justice League. And we had Geoff Johns doing Doomsday Clock. And ultimately, that doesn't make a lot of sense. Now, if you want to, at the end of Death Metal, like what is supposed to happen, where those guys just to go get to tell stories with their space of the DC universe and make them, again, intimate, cool. I'm there for that 100%. Again, I'm just scared that the execution isn't going to quite line up with the desired result.
Yeah, I mean, it's a problem that DC has had. I mean, Marvel doesn't seem to have this idea, but they don't have the history and the kind of the continuity, the fact that continuity in DC as a thing has become its own, it's taken on a life of its own. That's why we have these crises every few years to try to, you know, fix it. And then that just became the narrative backbone of the DC universe, that they continually has these crises. So I sort of agree with you. I don't think that Scott, it's not in his wheelhouse to be the big architect of everything. I think Bendis used to be able to do it. I don't think it's his strong suit anymore. And I kind of feel the same way about Geoff Johns. I feel like so much of his attention is over on the television and movie side of things now. I think that's part of the reason Doomsday Clock took so long. And I think he would be the perfect guy to do it if that's where all his creative energy wanted to go. I don't think he's the right guy for the job anymore either, because he's not willing to do that. He rather would work on TV and movies, which is fine. I mean, do what makes you happy, Jeff, 100%. But don't make us wait over 2 years for a story that really could have set the future up of the DCU to continue the momentum that Rebirth gave us. Like, if that would have come out, like if they could have done that as a bi-weekly series, could you imagine Doomsday Clock being done in 6 months? It would have been right when Rebirth started to lose steam, and it would have re-energized it, and they could have kept that creative stuff going, you know. And say what you want about Dan Didio, the guy is a huge fan of comics, super passionate, really loves it, and maybe he did have a heavy hand when it came to steering the DC boat, but now it feels in my mind sort of rudderless, because as much as I love Scott, I don't think he's the right guy to be guiding the entire DC universe forward, because I don't think he has the right mindset. I don't think he would be heavy-handed, and in a way you do need that person that's going to tell people no, that's willing to tell somebody no, that might be a good idea, but it's not right for the DC universe, or at least not at this time. And you know, say what you will about Dan, but he would do that. You know, he did have a vision for what the DC universe should be. Whether you agree with that vision or not, at least he had something. At least it was going somewhere. Now 5G's out the door, you know, out the window. We've thrown it away. It's like now all of a sudden it sounds like, from what we're hearing from DC, death metal is going to become the new template, if you will. It's going to set everything up going forward. So it's going to replace 5G. But in a way, I feel like death metal and the technical problems that it has are, you can lay those at the feet of the success of Dark Knight's metal. And a lot of the mm-hmm. things that you're saying, Dark Knight, about what was wrong with the first metal series, or this rather, is what I said about the first one. It's choppy, it's lazy, it jumps around, it's not accessible, especially for new readers. But it was so successful. So from Scott and Greg Capullo's point of view, why would you just not go back and do that again, but then throw in all these other cool, crazy ideas, you know, to make it even metaler, right? Like, because we had the Batman mixed with Flash. We had Batman mixed with Wonder Woman. We had Batman mixed with Doomsday. Batman mixed with Green Lantern. You know, these dark knights, these dark multiverse versions of Batman mixed with, you know, other counterparts. And that was like a cool idea. And Batman fans loved it, and the sales went through the roof, and people loved it. So why not go back to that same formula and throw in more cool stuff and make it even metaler rather than doing the work? Because I agree with you to some extent. They have had a really long time to put this together. But I'm still giving Scott the benefit of the doubt that it's still, you know, regardless of how long he's had to plot the overall themes, he's still writing it on a schedule. He's still writing the script out on a schedule, and things have changed, you know, as we've talked about with 5G and Doomsday Clock taking forever and the pandemic and such. So my understanding was that Dark Knight Metal was already at the printer, issue one. Death Metal was already at the printer. So he didn't really have 4 months to make any changes. I mean, they could have, but it would have cost DC, you know, money. And we all know Pamela Lyford, she's not going to allow that, because she's evil incarnate, far more evil than the Batman Who Laughs Last could ever hope to be. The Batman Who Laughs Last looks like Goldilocks compared to Pamela Lyford. But so I don't think there was much they could have done, because they didn't know. And I think even right now, as we sit here and record this, they probably still haven't plotted everything out. Because again, it's the ship is somewhat rudderless. They're trying to please the AT&T corporate overlords, but at the same time, they're trying to do things that are cool. But there's probably some people that are still there that, you know, like the idea of what Dan was trying to put together. So I don't think they have a vision right now, and I think it shows. I think it shows in this book with the changes they did make after Dan left. What I'm hoping is it tightens up, with the subsequent issues, which weren't already at the printer. But I mean, there's no way to know, because again, with the success of the first Metal series and I hate to say it, but the kind of lazy writing and the choppiness of it and throwing everything at the wall to see what sticks, and it succeeded. I mean, why should they change anything, right? I mean, you said it yourself, Knight. I don't know if we were recording at the time, but all these reviews when this issue came out on the internet, 10 out of 10, it's greatest thing ever, best comic ever written, can't wait to see what happens next. This is not that, you know? I give it a full extra point on my 1 to 10 scale. I give it a full extra point for Wonder Woman chainsawing the Batman Who Laughs. Like, that is worth a whole point to me. But I still, even with that, couldn't give this higher than like a 7.5.
Yeah. I mean, spoilers. I mean, I gave it a 4. So
yeah, I watched your review. I got a lot of enjoyment out of it. And again, I come at it from a different perspective. And I think part of the reason I give it the score I give it is because I do see potential. I do see potential. I loved what was done with Wally West. And again, and this is what goes back to you talking about all the exposition. Even with all the exposition in this issue, it's still not new reader friendly. So I do agree with you. It's sort of time and real estate wasted. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a huge DC fan. Now, full disclosure, for the last, 6 or 8 months, I haven't been reading that many comics. There's just been too many other things going on in my real life. But since the pandemic has started, and really in the last week, I've dedicated myself, I need to get caught up. So in the last week, in preparation, before I even read, I didn't read Dark Knight Death Metal 1 until today. In preparation, this last week, I read Justice League from 1 to 37, the entire run. I read Flash Forward, the whole thing, from 1 to 6, reread that, all that. I reread Heroes in Crisis, reread all that. I wanted to reread like all the Year of the Villain stuff, but there's just no way. There's literally not enough hours in the day. But I did reread Hell Arisen. So, you know, I read a lot of the what you would consider required reading to sort of understand, you know, what's coming and what to expect in Death Metal. And I think it did help me to enjoy it, because all that was really fresh in my mind. And I liked a lot of what they were doing. I mean, I love Tom King. I mean, Tom he's my guy, you know? And as much as I love Tom, I don't feel like Heroes in Crisis worked. It's not a conversation I would ever have with Tom on the record, but off the record, I'm going to sit down with Tom at some point and we're going to talk about what he was trying to do there. Like, because I sort of get it. But I don't know, like, am I understanding what you were going for, or am I just projecting onto it? I'm curious. But based on the fact that Wally is so beloved, and it kind of mirrors Doomsday Clock, in that Wally's being constantly told, and he mentions it in Heroes in Crisis, he mentions it in Flash Forward about how everybody always tells him, you're the hope in the DC universe, you're the hope in the DC universe. That's what we saw Geoff Johns saying about Superman. In Doomsday Clock, you're the hope in the DC universe, you're the hope in the DC universe. I don't know that they would ever do to Superman what they did to Wally. He kind of got done dirty. And so I liked in Flash Forward that it, you know, put him on the Mobius chair. He sits on the Mobius chair and he gains Dr. Manhattan's powers to some extent, or at least some remnant of, you know, and the hydrogen atom shows up on his forehead. I liked all that. Again, it's potential. It's exciting. You're going to do something with Wally. Maybe you can get buy-in, because for some reason, Wally is... like, people care about what, like, Barry Allen's my Flash, right? I'm of the older generation. Barry Allen is my Flash. I know a lot of people, Wally West is their Flash, which is why Rebirth worked so well when they brought, you know, Wally back. And I admit getting choked up reading that scene. It was a poignant scene. It was cool. And it really got a lot of people. I think it was one of the reasons that Rebirth was so successful. So, again, I think you had potential. Like, if you're going to – I don't know why Tom – King chose Wally of all people, but he did. But now you're going to redeem Wally in such a way, and it could work, and it's potential, and maybe that's why I'm want to give this the benefit of the doubt, because I think it could work. But I almost feel like the real life politics of DC maybe what's has already prevented this from working. If you could have had them all pulling in the same direction, if you could have had, you know, the schedules line up right, you could have left Tom King alone to do what he was going to do on Batman. You had Doomsday Clock coming out on time. Didio was still there with the, you know, 5G. I don't even know if 5G would have happened if you could have kept the momentum going from Rebirth, which I feel like you could have, as I already mentioned, if you had Doomsday Clock on another schedule. So I don't know. I still think this has potential because it can bring Wally back. And if you manage to capture the magic and the moment that they showed in DC Rebirth with Wally coming back, if you can do that somehow in this series and do it well, then I think people may be willing to overlook some of the shortcomings of this story. I don't know. What do you think, Manny? I mean, I know you're kind of behind on stuff too. I don't know if you know how much of that stuff you've read going into Death Metal.
I just don't know. I just don't think that they can redo something like Rebirth, because Rebirth followed just a set of stories from Justice League War. And it was so much cleaner than what you see here. And then Rebirth didn't need this like super flashy, super, you know, like pop culture metal vibe. Just that it almost seems like they decided to throw away, they decided to throw away the whole 5G thing, and then they just kind of looked around and it's like, this worked. Let's just cram it all in here and hit the reset button. And you know, that's just, it's not granted. There's a lot of stuff working against him, right? Bond had planned it out so much. And, you know, John's Didio and probably Jim Lee and the rest of the gang, just, it was all so methodically planned out. And then just when they delivered the story, it was clean to give you that. Am I gonna keep reading it? Yeah. Do I have the highest hope for it? Not at all. But it does leave the room to be surprised. You know, because ideally, and it's not like I want the book to be bad. I am 100% rooting for, you know, Snyder and the rest of the team to put out a magnificent story. That's what I want. So if it turns out to be better later, great. If not, then it would be a disappointment. But you know, just yeah, it. So some things really work once, and then you know, let's try to move on to a different idea. And one thing I wanted to say earlier is, you know, Snyder does such a good job with a focused story on maybe a singular character or a group. But I just think this maybe got a little bit too big. And I completely agree with Knight when he says that, you know, there's not a lot of excuses because of the amount of time that he had to get this done. Granted, like I said, maybe they just came up to him in the last couple of months and said, you need to cram all this stuff in there. And there, you know, a lot of things had to change, but it's not like, you know, we just talked about Infinite Dark, and Ryan had a couple of issues because, you know, he didn't know if the money was going to be there, but he still, you know, there's quite a difference. So I really hope that it gets better, but you know, for me, I know I haven't said anything, but it's like a 5, because I can't really recommend this to a friend who hasn't necessarily picked up a book in a while, because it just leaves you really confused.
Yeah, this is not new reader friendly at all. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, so it's almost like in order for me to recommend something from DC right now, I have to wait post Metal. That's not what I want.
All right, Knight, were you going to say something?
I mean, I don't even think it's old reader friendly, to be honest with you. So, I mean, there's just so much. Like, I think one of the things that really, really bothers me is that, you know, for all the complaints I've had about Snyder, he spent a couple of years really setting this up. And then at the culmination of it all, the first issue of this series, he goes back and he's like, you remember those like 7 forces that we only kind of maybe more or less explained 3 of them in my Justice League? Yeah, those kind of don't really matter anymore, which is really frustrating to me, because I know that, you know, from my complaints that I've had of Snyder in the last couple of years, he is very ethical when it comes to making sure his customers, his readers, are getting the value out of their books. And I often sing his praises for that. But suddenly invalidating a good portion, a good body of work that led up to this is the exact opposite of that. And I don't think, you know, he thought of it that way. I don't think Scott Steiner was kind of cognizant of the fact that, like, hey, by invalidating, you know, X amount of issues from my Justice League, I'm suddenly depreciating the value of my work. But it is a byproduct of what happened there. And, you know, I know we've talked a little bit about, like, Doomsday Clock's release. I don't think that was John's. You know, as far as I know, John's had that script finished. Like, all 12 issues originally finished by the time issue one came out. So I feel like there had to have been something else going on in there. I definitely feel like it was DiDio, because DiDio has pretty much gone on record now saying he was not a proponent of DC Rebirth. What was Doomsday Clock? The culmination of DC Rebirth? So I can't help but feel like what happened was, you know, DiDio, you know, got on his knees, kind of supplicated to Bendis. Bendis did his thing. Some things got really messed up. He let Tom King do his thing, and it all kind of screwed things up for Doomsday Clock, because it's very evident that there were things in Doomsday Clock that had to be kind of turned on the heels. You know what I mean? Like, the fact that it's like issue two or three, they bring up Sanctuary. Doomsday Clock was announced like a year before Heroes in Crisis ever came out. Sanctuary really wasn't a thing. So it's pretty obvious that there were a lot of heavy editorial changes. I think a big part of that as well is that, as you know, Geoff Johns stepped down as a big executive. He probably lost a lot of control, you know, especially a lot of that executive and publisher control. That's also around the time that AT&T really started stepping in and messing things up. So, I mean, maybe it's just me wearing rose-colored glasses when it comes to Johns, because I have a lot of respect for him. As a writer, his ethics as somebody who's generating a product, but and just based on, you know, what I feel is evidence, I feel like that was a publishing issue. And DC is really kind of scaring me right now, because it seems like I don't remember which one of you said this, but one of you had mentioned that you don't think DC has had a direction. And I actually think the issue is that DC has had directions. They've just been jumping from direction to direction. They're afraid to settle ground somewhere. And that's kind of proven evident in the all of these errors in editorial. Like, one of my biggest issues with DC right now is that they have talent. They have so much talent on their roster. But editorial has no idea what sandbox to put each one of these creators in, or how much room they need to give, how much they need to give resistance. Like, I had an interview with Brian Hill somewhere in the last month. And one of the things he had told me is that throughout all of his time in comics, he has not had a thorough relationship with any one of his editors. That's the editor's responsibility. Like, your responsibility as an editor, obviously, is to generate something that is going to sell books. But on the story level, you're supposed to distill the creator's vision into the best possible thing it can be. What do you need to do? You need to form a relationship with that creator. Figure out how their mind works. Figure out how they're processing story and how they consider these characters and the mythos surrounding these characters. And even further on the scale of the DC, what, Omniverse now? So, you know, there's just been so many issues with editorial. And I think that a majority of DC's problems that I've had with them over the last 2 years or so are entirely issues with editorial. And the only reason I think DC Rebirth was a success was because Geoff Johns was in enough of a leadership position that he could take control. I mean, you know, Jace, we've mentioned on one of our collaborations about how, you know, Geoff and multiple creators have talked about how they would have meetings with Geoff to kind of go over things, outline, plan. That's the editor's job. And they put Geoff Johns in a position where he, as not only his own writer, a writer of his own work, but as an executive, had to step in and make those decisions. So it's like, you know, if anything, I think that this shows that, especially if we're getting a DC universe where every story now matters, we need editorial more now than ever. So do I think that's going to be affected? Probably not. You know, There definitely needs to be a shift in the publishing office. And I, frankly, if I can, I guess, be so bold. It's kind of sad, you know, that a 23-year-old kid sitting in his living room has to point that out to them.
Well, I mean, that's just comics these days. You know, it's not the creative process is not what it used to be. Editors don't wield the same sort of power that they used to. And I don't know if it's because comics have become mainstream and, you know, there's billion-dollar properties and billion-dollar movies and that sort of thing. If that's what it is, I agree with you. Part of what made Rebirth and that initiative so successful was the fact that Geoff Johns was a de facto editor on those books, at least, you know, as they started to go. I think that Dan envisioned himself as sort of, you know, it's funny. Manny and I have had this conversation a lot. I think you and I have had it as well, Knight, is mm-hmm. that, you know, you look at what Didio did as publisher, as opposed to what over at Marvel, what Quesada or Axel Alonso or now C.B. Cebulski does as editor in chief. Didio was much more of an editor in chief than he was a publisher. You know, yes, he still handled some of those publisher duties, printing and other media and that kind of thing. But that's why he was co-publisher with Jim Lee, because Jim handled the more business side of things. So I think that, you know, Dan loves comics so much. He loves story. I know that he would meet with the many of the creators at the conventions throughout the year, and he would sit down and he would have those conversations. And I'm sure in his mind he was thinking he was, in a way, fulfilling that role of editor. He's the one that had those relationships. He's the one that was helping to get the best out of the creators when it came to story. So yeah, I agree with you that that's what needs to happen. But unfortunately, this isn't a DC problem. This is an industry problem. I don't know why. I'm not enough of an insider to know why it has changed so much. I know that editors now they oversee more books, and maybe it's a fiscal thing. Maybe it's that the fact that Marvel's now owned by Disney and DC's now owned by AT&T, and it's just a different structure, and they don't see these they don't see these endeavors as creative. They just are looking at the bottom line. How can we make money off of these things? You know, Manny and I have talked about many times that there's no part of corporate America or any corporation around the world. There's no part of corporate and business and making money, in my mind, that is a positive for creative endeavors.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't. The two things are diametrically opposed.
I do think that in some cases it can become a thing, because some creatives really do need an exterior motivation to get the juices flowing. They need something to make them hungry. And while I agree, like I just think it's too much of a nuanced situation to generally say that kind of business doesn't drive any, you know, positive creativity or any positive publishing. Because, you know, for example, my and this is kind of a nuanced example, you know, my favorite era in all of comics is the Vertigo age. I think it was genius. I think Karen Berger is an absolute fucking legend. Excuse my French, sorry if you have to beep that out later. And not only did she provide this incredibly new age of storytelling in comics through Vertigo, those creators went on to be some of the greatest superhero comics storytellers of all time, right? You know, you get guys like Neil Gaiman, Alan Moore, Grant Morrison, Mark Millar, Brian Bolland, you know, on art. There's Garth Ennis, Warren Ellis. Like, there's so many incredibly talented people that came out of that revolutionized the industry and the medium through Vertigo and went on to do the same in kind of larger titles. But what was great is that DC was going through tough stuff monetarily. So what happened? They told Karen Berger to figure out a way to bring and breathe new life into their books. She went overseas, brought about the British invasion of comics, which has, again, afforded us some of the greatest comics that the medium has ever seen, point blank. I'll die on that hill. And that was a product of DC monetarily not doing so hot. And, you know, where it does become nuanced is not all those Vertigo books sold super well, right? Fortunately, they were given longevity because of the credibility and quality of the work. which eventually led to a lot of those books selling well, because I do believe that eventually word of mouth carried, right? I mean, Sandman became DC's number one selling comic, although it took a while. That's pretty damn astounding, right? That something that kind of almost avant-garde and esoteric, you know, becomes DC's number one selling book. And it was because the quality continued and the word of mouth carried, and it changed the industry. So, you know, where I agree that certainly business practices can really, really dampen and the quality of the storytelling, I also think that it has brought about the proper motivation to get some of these companies to make, you know, such kind of fresh business decisions that resulted in some of the best work we've ever seen in comics.
My argument against that now, though, is that you're talking about a much smaller company. You're talking about DC being owned by Warner Brothers. You're not talking about, you know, billion-dollar properties. You're not talking about, you know, Marvel characters on the big screen. Now that these giant international conglomerates own them, I just don't see somebody at DC Comics having the freedom, and the DC as an entity having the nimbleness to innovate like that. I just don't see it.
Well, the issue with DC is that, I mean, again, I think a big part of it's editorial. They don't have the people who are in the positions to not only bring those suggestions to mind, but they don't have the agency to affect any of it. There's nobody in comics, no editor right now that is anything like a Karen Berger or even remotely close. Personally, I think DC has one good editor right now, and it's Mark Doyle. He's doing a solid job on DC Black Label stuff. He killed it on the Bat titles in the New 52. He was killing it on Vertigo as an editor under Karen Berger before that. You know, but aside from that, I'm not really happy with anybody at DC. That's a big problem. They're not putting people in those positions that can affect the change. I don't know. It's frustrating. It's very, very frustrating because, you know, I aspire to get into that space one day. And when and this is where I do become afraid of some of the things that you're talking about. I am afraid that one day I'm going to have an idea that might genuinely be great, and they might say no money, and then, you know, I get to go cry myself to sleep because of it. But it's just that there, again, it's maybe you might be true, you know, a higher percentage of the time, especially in modern comics, because we don't have the people in the positions to affect positive change. But I still do think that sometimes, you know, business can drive strong creativity. You know, I think that's a big reason as to why they put C.B. Sobolski into the position of editor-in-chief at Marvel. You know, Marvel started really slumping under Axel Alonso. So what do? They put him in there. Frankly, I mean, I'm not in love with every book that Marvel's putting out, but you can tell that C.B. Sobolski has kind of put all of his ducks in a row and is starting to, and has started to allow for some sort of consensus and putting the right people on the right books at the right time, which is ultimately, you know, all I can ask for. So, you know, and Disney's a bigger company than WB. If Disney can do it, there's no reason WB and AT&T can't. And it's really incredibly frustrating. And I wish that, in general, this is a general comic book industry kind of jab, is that I wish they understood that quality books will sell eventually. And I wish that they'd stop catering to kind of superficial motives for sales, you know, that all of the number ones, and as much as I enjoy the cool gimmicky covers, they're getting old, and things of that nature. Just put out good books, because word of mouth will carry, and you'll make more money on the back end from trades anyways, because let's be real, you don't really make that much money off of floppies. It's not a super, nobody does. The stores don't, the publishers don't. So why not put yourself in a position where people are going to want to go back, buy the trades? And not only do you have that, you have the prestige of likely not only having critically lauded books, but books that are winning awards, right? Like that sells things. When you hear Oscar award nominated, Oscar award winning, you know, I would say at least 7 out of 10 people are at least slightly more interested in seeing that movie because it denotes some level of quality. So, you know, as a creative person, I wish that that was the focus, because I do believe that quality will eventually equate to money.
Yeah, but there's, I got two words for you why that won't work. Pamela Lyford.
I knew
she's
that was
never
coming.
Read a comic book in her life. Yeah. Or at least she didn't when she got the job. So she doesn't care. All she cares about is money. That's all she cares about, is making it profitable. So there is a school of thought. I have heard rumblings of this. I have nobody that I'll quote. But the fact of the matter is that we may be seeing less continuity between DC. It may become more Marvel-like in that way, where you're just going to, again, you know, to your point, try to put the right creators on the right books and just let them tell the stories they want to tell. And then if it lines up, it lines up. If it doesn't, it doesn't. I see the benefit to that. I think that does lead to evergreen stories like Killing Joke and Dark Knight Returns and Watchmen and things like that. Part of the charm and what a lot of diehard DC fans love is the continuity. So if you loosen those strings up, yeah, it can work. It could lead to, you know, creators having more freedom and being able to do things and lead to good stories. You may alienate some of your readership. Does it matter at this point? It might not. You know, it may be a small enough percentage, and we're talking, you know, small slices of the pie at this point anyway. So if they go that route, then great. If what Snyder is trying to do, you know, it almost feels like what they're trying to do with to bring this back to death metal is, you know, they threw out 5G, so they said, well, what do we have, you know, that's going on? What do we have that we can build off of? Well, we have death metal. We have what Scott's been doing. We know he's popular with the fans. We know his books sell. Let's just hitch our wagon to that. And if it doesn't work, then, you know, we can pivot. We can try something else. But again, it goes back to the fact that DC feels rudderless. And, you know, we talked about you, Comic Boom, and I, Dark Knight, when Didio first got let go. We speculated on who they might bring in. They haven't brought anyone in. And I'm not saying that Jim Lee is not a great creator. I'm not saying the guy's not, you know, super intelligent, obviously a very talented artist. But I don't think he doesn't come at the creative process the same way that Didio does, in terms of getting really excited and being bombastic and having this idea and putting all his creative juices behind it. You know, he's just not that sort of guy, which is perfectly fine. C.B. Cebulski, to some extent, is that sort of guy. And I do think DC would really benefit from having somebody of kind of that perspective in the role of co-publisher or editor-in-chief. You know, you have Bob Harris as your editor-in-chief. The guy's a suit at this point. You know, he's in a way, he's a controversial figure because he works behind the scenes. He's very much an insider. People seem to love him or hate him. He's been accused of protecting people like Eddie Berganza for too long. It does feel like, in a way, he's overstayed his welcome. It's time for him to go, and it's time to get somebody in that editor-in-chief role who's a true editor and who is going to guide the creatives and guide the creative staff to do the things that you were talking about, Dark Knight, as far as having relationships with our creators and get the best out of them. Without something like that, I honestly worry about the future of DC. We can look at sort of the what's left on the table in Dark Knight Death Metal number one. I gave it a 7.5 out of 5, so that's leaving 2.5 points on the table. You gave it a 4, that leaves 6 points on the table. Manny gave it a 5, so we're probably averaging right around a 6. That's still a lot of meat left on the bone, a lot of room for improvement. Could a strong editor have made the difference? Maybe. Couldn't have really made it worse, could they have? So you just wonder how much of it is the fact that Scott is sort of unchallenged there. You know, Geoff Johns is not – he's not really there anymore. Didio's not there. So, you know, who do you have left? And I will point out that the editor on this book is Marie Javins, who I don't know personally, but I've only ever heard good things about how she really is a great facilitator as an editor. But she wasn't the editor on a lot of – I have no inside knowledge, but I don't think that she's Snyder's favorite editor. Certainly not the editor that he had on most of his previous works. I think he actually likes to work with Mark Doyle, who you mentioned. a lot. So I'm kind of surprised that Mark Doyle wasn't the editor on this, and I wonder if that would have made a difference. So yeah, I mean, we've strayed pretty far from the topic of just death metal number one, as we always do. I mean, we recognize that there are problems at DC, and obviously we wouldn't go on and on about them if we didn't care so much. And we do see that there's potential, but I think until they get another co-publisher or another editor in chief, and until Pamela Lyford moves on to something else, or whoever this person DC brings in has enough clout or makes enough changes to basically create some momentum and create some leverage by saying, hey, look, I came in, the books were doing this. I came in, now the books are doing this much better and people are talking about them and sales are through the roof, to gain that leverage, to be able to stand up to Lyford. I mean, we had this conversation, Manny, when AT&T first, you know, officially took over, and we found out about Pamela Lyford in the first place. And I said, I said, I'm really worried about this Pamela Lyford person. She seems like she could be the devil. And it turns out that maybe that's the case. Now, I don't know Pamela Lyford personally, and she might be a wonderful person, always drops a dollar in the Salvation Army Christmas collection pot, and, you know, loves her kids, and, you know, donates to St. Jude's Hospital, and is just a lovely, lovely person. That may all be true. I might meet her personally someday, and just she'll charm the pants right off me. But in terms of the decisions that she makes regarding DC Comics, to me, she is the devil. And I understand that she is just doing her job, doing what her bosses are telling her to do. But in terms of what's best for DC creatively, to get the best out of the creative people, to get the best out of the characters and the stories, she's the Antichrist.
Mm. Wow. I have a question, Jace, because I know you're much more of an industry guy than I am, and you've obviously been reading comics for much longer than I have. If I know this is kind of still unrelated to metal, but if you could pick somebody to step into that, whether or not it's a publisher or an editor-in-chief role, whatever, somebody who is spearheading editorial, is there anybody in particular you would have in mind? And if that's the case, you know, why?
Besides myself?
Well, I mean, listen, if you want to be publisher and hire me as editor-in-chief, I'm in.
You know, let's do it. I would go in there, and I would probably last maybe 6 months, because I would die on a lot of hills and they would kick me out most likely.
I'll stand with you in solidarity, brother.
After less than 6 months. It's a tough question, you know. It's a really tough question. When Stan Lee passed away, you know, tragic loss, I felt like I was almost as sad as when I'd lost my own grandfather when Stan passed. And we lost a cheerleader, a real advocate for comics. And people asked me, well, who would you see in that role? The only person that could come close to that in my mind is Kevin Smith. He's the only one that sort of has the clout and the name recognition. But I don't even think he, you know, he wouldn't do it the same way as Stan, and that's perfectly fine. But he wouldn't want to do it, and he would scoff at me for comparing him to Stan Lee, because it's not where his creative juices lie. But I kind of feel the same way about anybody that I would suggest. Somebody that sort of has a track record with exactly the sort of thing we're talking about, revitalizing, would be Jimmy Palmiotti.
Interesting.
Who I think could do a good job. He's has a wealth of knowledge. He's been around the industry forever. He knows everybody. He is a cheerleader for comics. But again, I don't think Jim, you know, he kind of did it already with Marvel. And Marvel, when he and Joe Quesada, you know, started Marvel Knights and kind of revitalized Marvel, Marvel was in a much worse place than DC is right now. So I do think that he could do it. I just don't think at this point in his career that he would necessarily want to. He likes his creative freedom. He likes, you know, being able to do the things that him and Amanda do with paper films. Go to paperfilms.com and you'll see kind of the things I'm talking about. Runs his successful Kickstarters, tells the stories he wants to tell, isn't that much interested anymore in working on characters that aren't his own. But I don't know. I mean, if AT&T were willing to throw enough money at him, he's really the only one that comes to mind that I think could do it. But I don't see him as a long-term solution either, because, again, I just don't think Jimmy would want to do it for, you know, a long period of time. I think Jeff Johns would be – I mean, he just having Jeff Johns say, I'm going to step in and be the editor-in-chief or the
– publisher.
Or the chief creative officer, co-publisher, basically swap places with Jim Lee.
He was the chief creative officer.
He was the chief creative officer. And when he stepped down as chief creative officer, that's when Jim Lee got the – he was still co-publisher, and Jim Lee went from being co-publisher to being co-publisher and chief creative officer. And now Lee is just publisher and chief creative officer. Yeah. So Lee's got a lot on his plate. Not to mention the guy's got like 74 kids, so I just don't know where he finds. And he streams on Twitch, and Jim's a great guy. Like, I love Jim. But again, I just don't think that's – just like Jimmy, I don't think that's where Jeff – it's not where his heart lies right now. It's not what he wants to be doing. But, I mean, could you just imagine DC fanboys would lose their minds? DC says –
oh, yeah.
Jeff comes on, says, we're going to do this event. It's going to be, you know, line wide. Every book, you know, kind of like Crisis was back in the day, like every single book for the month of June and July is going to tie in. Those sales would be through the roof.
I mean, Rebirth, I mean, that was his brainchild. Yeah. And then Rebirth saw some of the best sales DC has seen since, you know, the beginning of the new 52. Yep. And it was almost all really good.
Yeah, it really was. So, I mean, those are Jimmy or Jeff are the two that come to mind. When I'm trying to think of somebody who, you know, has been around the industry, is known, because you can't just throw somebody in there. You'd be throwing them to the wolves if they you know, don't have relationships in the industry. And the other thing is they have to really be a fan of the characters. They have to love DC and know DC lore. And so it's tough, you know, like somebody like a Steve Orlando who knows DC history really well, but I don't know if he has, you know, the right sensibility. I don't know if he's been around long enough. Tom King's another one. He's got the knowledge. But, you know, he comes at his stories from a much different perspective. You know, do we want every comic to be the title character, first panel splash page, title character staring at the window, looking at the rain. And then page two, the story actually starts, you know, so it's got to be the right person. It's got to be the right temperament. It's not an easy job. I give all the credit in the world to Dan for keeping that job as long as he did. And I think he did much more good than bad. And we've talked about that. You can go back and listen to the episodes at the time when he left DC. So it's tough. I can't think of a really great person. So, you know, as much as I, you know, casting throwing stones at Pamela Lyford, you know, I don't have a good answer either. But, you know, I don't have the power to actually interview people for the job. If I did, maybe I could find somebody who was a right fit. So I would say, I would start with Jeff. If I couldn't get Jeff, I'd try Jimmy. If I couldn't get Jimmy, I'd try Kevin Smith. I don't know what his knowledge of the DC universe is. It certainly would drum up some excitement. But I don't know, if I was even more of an insider, I might have a better answer for you. But it's tough. I mean, it's the reason I would never, as much as I love DC, as much as I'm steeped in knowledge of DC lore and, you know the history of the comic book industry pretty well. And I know a lot of people, but I don't have the cred. I don't have the street cred. You know, I've never written a comic. I've never drawn a comic. I wouldn't succeed. It would be hard for me to gain the respect of those creatives, because I wouldn't know where I'm coming from. And I've been there in terms of the industry that I work in, where people have been with very little experience have been placed above me. And I have that, you know, I know that that's how they'd feel like. I feel like, why should I listen to what you're telling me when what you're telling me is wrong, because you've never done it and you've never come up through the trenches. So yeah, as much as I tongue in cheek say I'd love the job, I don't think that I would I don't think I would have the respect of the creators, but I'd be willing to give it a try. What about you? Do you have somebody that you
I have two kind of fun names that I think are just interesting idea candy to talk about. Although I do ultimately think that Jeff Johns would be the best man for the job, like bar none. So I'll throw these two names at you guys, and I'm really curious to see what you say. One of which is older, very, very experienced in publishing, especially at DC. Even if it's just for a short time to kind of course correct, how would you feel about like Paul Levitz? Like, he knows the continuity. He's steeped in it. He's been in executive roles.
He's already done. He's already done it. He was head of DC already.
He was president. He wasn't editorial.
I don't ever think he was editor in chief, but he was an editor there, and as president, he did exert tremendous creative control. He was the one who would green light projects or not, in terms of you can go and read stories about projects he was talked into by Karen Berger that ultimately succeeded, did really well, that he would have, you know, not greenlit if it wasn't for her advocating for them. So he did.
No, but there's also, though, something worth mentioning, the fact that he allowed somebody to make their case, right? Because sometimes people in those positions of power just throw down blanket no's. So I think that's kind of a tell of a good, somebody who's well oriented in a position of power within publishing, you know, the ability to be convinced and to allow people to convince him.
I know Paul, I've met Paul, I've interviewed Paul. He's a super nice guy, super great guy.
He's very sweet, dude.
He would never go back and do it. I'm confident of that. He just wouldn't want to deal with the politics, because now there's even more oversight. Like when he did it, Warner Brothers owned DC, and there was enough oversight for him there. And that's ultimately why he kind of stepped away from it. So now with AT&T, so I don't think he would ever do it. Do I think he could do a good job? I think he could right the ship. I think he could stabilize things. I don't necessarily see him at this point being somebody who would bring a lot of innovation. But to your point, Knight, he might be able to bring in people directly below him who could bring that level of innovation. So, I don't think he would do a bad job. But I just know there's no way he would ever want to.
Yeah, I didn't think it was realistic either, because of, like you had mentioned, he did step away. But I did think he was interesting to kind of discuss, and I do think, like I said, at a bare minimum, he can right the ship. But I'm curious, Manny, how would you feel about like a Paul Levitz in editorial power at DC again?
You know, I've talked to him a couple of times, and I just think he's so comfortable now where he's at, doing what he's doing now, that, you know, given his track record before, It might be interesting to see him come in as a consultant, maybe, to whoever it is decides to step in. But as the man for the job, I just don't think he left the way he did. I don't think he'd be willing to. And it's hard to see at this point.
Okay, that's fair. So
go ahead.
I was going to say my other kind of. Almost screwball of a toss that I think is interesting, like conversation fodder. Why the hell not Grant Morrison?
No.
God, no.
Oh, no.
No.
Oh, man.
No.
Oh,
I don't know. he knows. I think you would be hard pressed to find many people that know DC continuity better than Grant Morrison does.
Yes.
I love the way in a no.
Yeah, I would agree with you. There's probably very few people, maybe Mark Waid, who know DC history better than Grant Morrison. The problem with Grant is that he's often the smartest person in the room, but he knows he's the smartest person in the room.
He wants to make sure you know it.
And I don't see him as a leader. I don't see people following him. I see people in awe of him. But I feel like Grant's best days of creativity are behind him in a way, because he's gotten to be so big. It's kind of like Will Smith whenever I watch a Will Smith movie now, I'm keenly aware of the fact that I'm watching a Will Smith movie. I don't see the character he's playing. I see Will Smith. And when I read a Grant Morrison comic now, I'm keenly aware that it feels to me like he's kind of showing off. It's a Grant Morrison comic. It's not a Superman comic or a Green Lantern comic. And so I have a feeling that that sort of aspect might bleed over. I would be happy to be wrong because he has done some really great things. I'm not a fan of him. He's done a few things I've liked. I do think that All-Star Superman is spectacular. In my mind, it's the best thing that he's ever done. But I just don't see it. I mean, didn't he took over as editor of in chief of, wasn't it Heavy Metal?
Heavy Metal magazine. Yeah.
And he didn't even last in that for even 6 months.
Oh, is he done already? Yeah. I didn't even know that.
Yeah. He already, he only lasted like 4 months. So I don't know that really he would have the desire.
That totally changes my pitch. I thought he was still editor in chief at Heavy Metal magazine.
I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure he moved on from that fairly quickly. I'm not sure.
I'm really curious. I might have to Google this because I had no idea.
Because I know Tim Seeley is involved with them over there now. They had a lot of turnover. They've had a lot of turnover in the last couple of years.
It still says Grant Morrison via Wikipedia. Oh, wait a minute. Tim Seeley is the new editor-in-chief of Heavy Metal magazine as of March 12, 2020. Holy shit. Yeah. I did not know that.
Yeah, so I don't know when it's a magazine that's been around as long as Heavy Metal has. I don't know what the day-to-day is. I don't know what Grant's involvement is. So but it just didn't seem like he was there that long. So you just kind of wonder. You throw out names like Paul Levitz, I think, what about Marv Wolfman? let's really go old school here.
I love Marv Wolfman. He's like the sweet, old, tender grandfather of comics now. But I definitely think creatively his like you had pointed it at Morrison. I think it's doubly true for Marv.
Yeah. I think the best days are behind him. Roy Thomas is still out there. I mean, there's a lot of, you can really go old school, but I think their heyday has come and gone, and they're legends, and rightfully so. But I think you need somebody a little younger. You have somebody in mind, Manny?
So I have a name for you guys. Maybe it's just because I'm a fanboy, but he has been around a couple of different companies writing books, and DC specifically too. Jeff Lemire.
I like him writing too much. I just don't want to take.
I have that same thought, but I was like, you know what? If there's somebody who I think could do a very decent job as much as I, but then that means I wouldn't get any more Gideon Falls.
Yeah.
He did.
I think too, one of the things that might make me slightly skeptical of Jeff Lemire is that I've never seen him really spearhead anything as a leader in publishing. Like Jeff Lemire, I think you could make the argument. I don't know if I would, because I would have to really sit down and think. But I think the argument could be made that Jeff Lemire might be the best writer working in comics right now. And I wouldn't have harsh words for anybody that said that. But I think the reason he works so well is that he just gets to go off and play in his own space for the most part. And he gets to play in his own sandbox. And I'm not saying that I would really doubt Lemire. Like, I have faith in Lemire. He's never, proven any of my trust to be unworthy. But just based on experience, I don't know if he shows that he's the guy to be put in such a leadership role, right? It's like in the same way that, like, I loved Scott Snyder before his Justice League. They put him on Justice League and let him spearhead, the overarching kind of narrative of the DC universe. Did I think that he was the guy for that? No, I think that he would have been better served doing stuff with Vertigo and being the guy to kind of spearhead that, because that was in his alley. So I'm not sure what type of position I would even try to give Jeff Lemire as an editor, simply just, again, because I don't know if he's shown that that's in his tool set, and there's nothing wrong with that. And also, again, like you said, I mean, Gideon Falls, man. His books are so damn good that I just don't want him off the shelves.
I don't know. I mean, he's got the whole Black Hammer universe going over at Dark Horse, and that seems to do pretty well. Maybe it's just all one big story in his mind. But Jeff's smart enough that I think he could do it. I think he probably would be a good choice. But I'm not sure that he would want the job. But it does remind, so when I hear Jeff and I think about a lot of the books that he works on, and then his Bloodshot run over at Valiant, yes. Absolutely oh, epic. Yeah. So then immediately I got to think, well, why not Dinesh Shyamdasani?
I'm just going to mention that next. I mean, I was like, I know he's doing a bad idea.
Yeah.
Throw enough money at him. Let him take over the reins at DC. You saw what he did in a couple of years over at Valiant.
Yeah, again, I don't think he would ever do it in a million years. He's got bad idea. He's running his TV and a film production company. He doesn't have time to, you know, he would have to drop all that and go over because DC Publisher is a full-time job. Do I think he could be successful? Yeah, I do. I mean, the guy's got street cred. He brought Valiant back from nothing. And he's the kind of guy who could get fans excited. I don't know. I just don't know how the creatives would react to him. I mean, I know he has relationships with a lot of the creators at DC, but not as their boss. So that would be an interesting dynamic. So I wonder, you know, what could... I just think it would be an interesting idea. I would like to see what a Dinesh Shyamdasani DC era would look like. Somebody else, if you want to talk about, okay, let's just go with somebody from within the ranks. Like if there's one writer who I think has really elevated himself for the last 3 or 4 years, and in my mind has really done no wrong in terms of I've loved everything he's done at DC over the past 2 years. And could he just keep climbing that ladder? Could I see him leading DC into, you know, its next era? James Tynan.
Ooh,
not there yet. I just don't think he's...
No, you couldn't give him the job tomorrow, but I could see him in 15, 20 years.
I also honestly, like... I don't think that the next step after writer always means editor, though, because while, you know, certain qualities of either one of those kind of creative outlets can be symbiotic, it takes something entirely different to be an editor. It takes an immense amount of judgment. It takes, honestly, some balls, you know, like you gotta be the guy that has such a good finger on the pulse to where they know when to say no and they know when to let their creators do their thing. And I like Tynan. I like Tynan's work a lot. But I don't know if anything... I don't know if he's done anything that shows me that being an editor is necessarily in his toolbox. And I think that, you know, DC editorial needs somebody... I don't think they you had alluded to Dinesh, and I'm not going to try to butcher his last name. But, you know, he has that editorial experience, right? And he's like heading his own comic book company now, like Bad Idea, I think it's called. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I'd be more poised with somebody with editorial experience. If we're going to go with a writer at DC Comics, I feel like the logical decision would be Peter Tomasi. He has editorial experience, and he's done it very well.
Yeah.
He now, especially now that he has the perspective of a writer, like he has both perspectives. He knows how to deal with it and that kind of dichotomy. He was very successful, you know, in the mid-90s before he really, really started writing. I love his... I appreciate his love for the DC universe and the characters. And frankly, like, I feel like he's just getting whipped around on Detective Comics. I feel like they're not really letting him do his thing, which bothers the ever-loving piss out of me because for my money, he's one of the top five best writers at DC, maybe even top three right now. So if we're going with anybody at DC, I would definitely throw Tomasi's name in the ring.
There's a lot of people that we could mention. We could go on and on. I mean, Bendis, I'm sure there's a lot of people who would love to see him. Yeah, I know. Not me.
Not me either.
Not at all. Nobody here, but the name, you know, does come up from time. I think Mike Martz would be another one. You know, he did a good job on the Bat Books when he was there.
Absolutely. What is he even doing now?
He's the editor-in-chief at Aftershock.
Doing such a good job.
Yeah. So he left DC, you know, he started at Marvel, X-Men books. That's kind of where he cut his teeth, came up. Then he went to DC and he was editor on Batman books. Then when DC relocated, he didn't want to move to California. So he went back to Marvel, and then he left Marvel after only about a year to go to Aftershock. It was what made me kind of sit up and take notice of Aftershock. I'm like, if Mike March is leaving Marvel to go to this company, it's somebody I'm going to need to pay attention to.
Oh, dude. We've talked about it before, how I kind of went through the process of trying to get a job at Marvel, and then the Rona hit. I had actually approached Aftershock first before I approached Marvel, believe it or not. I had approached Christina Harrington at New York Comic Con last year, who is, I think, executive editor. I want to say she's a high-ranking editor. And unfortunately, you know, they're kind of small enough of a company to where they're not looking for like those super, super low editorial positions. But just having a conversation with her about like where she's coming out with these books. And obviously, you know, the fact of the matter on the most superficial level, the quality of the actual physical product is always great.
Yep.
They're going out of their way to keep their, I would say their publishing line fairly small, but also consistent. I give them so much credit. And another publishing company that has been just outrageously like rocketing into the stratosphere is Boom Studios too. Like, and I think that DC, AT&T, and the gods of comics permitting, I think they need somebody with an almost indie comics kind of mentality to breathe some life back into their line. But I do love that suggestion. Mike Martz is awesome. He clearly has an eye for talent. He clearly has an eye for narrative. I'm in, man. Like, that's, I honestly, I think that's the best suggestion of the night, to be 100% honest with you.
Yeah, I just don't know. I mean, the thing is, DC has so many. I mean, you mentioned Boom. I'm not going to get into the politics of why. I mean, they're doing really well, but as they're not, they don't have the level of talent DC does. They never will. It has to do with some politics, again, that I'm not going to get into. But yeah, you take somebody with that mentality of a Boom or an Aftershock, and you put them at DC, where they, even with Pamela Lyford holding the purse strings, you still have greater resources, and you have greater creative resources, because now you're working with these characters that are known worldwide, and you have the ability to change the course of the narrative of Superman or Batman. There's got to be some editorial cachet. So maybe Mike would be willing to do it. And, you know, one last name I got to throw out there, and I know that some people this guy, people love him or hate him, is Mark Waid. You want to talk about DC knowledge. Man, he may rival Grant Morrison in terms of DC knowledge. And he said he would never, come back. He famously had a falling out with Didio. Well, Didio's not there anymore. So would he be willing to? I mean, he's the publisher, editor, something along those lines over at Humanoids right now. So would he be willing to go over there? Would he do a good job? I don't know. He's been gone from there for so long. I don't know. I have a feeling he would be pretty heavy-handed with the ideas. And if he did go over there, we would see a seismic shift in the way the DC universe looked. And that could be good or it could be bad, depending on execution and what his idea might be. So I don't know. Coming from Didio, who had, from what we understand, a pretty heavy hand, I don't think that they would go that direction with somebody that would follow in those footsteps. It might be why they've decided not to name somebody, because Jim Lee is much more hands-off, and they're just letting everybody kind of get their feet under him before they bring somebody back in. Or maybe they just don't want to pay somebody. We'll just give the job to Jim and not pay him any more money and save that money. That seems like something AT&T would do.
I do think Mark Waid is coming to DC to write. I think that's in the books. One, because he did like randomly appear on like the DC Universe like talk show thing, which totally unexpected.
Yeah.
Like, and he obviously, like you said, has such a fondness for DC continuity. He knows it well. I don't necessarily think he's going to come over as an editor. But he also did talk about in that interview how he's been doing some pretty like profuse research on early Superman, Superboy stuff.
I was just going to say, if he does come over, I hope he follows Bendis on Superman and fixes all the bullshit that Bendis effed up.
Dude, cheers to that.
DH John, get us back to telling classic Superman stories, wipe all of Bendis's fingerprints on Superman from existence, and I'll be a happy, happy guy.
Hear, hear.
Speaking of which, one name that we have.
You cut out, Manny. What'd you say?
I said, what about Dan Jurgens?
He started out as an editor, if I'm not mistaken.
And so did Mark Waid, too. Mark Waid was an editor, and he got brought into writing by Brian Augustin.
Yeah, Mark Waid was an editor on Secret Origins, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, Jurgens, editor. Well, he was an artist on Warlord. But yeah, he does have editorial experience. Obviously, being a part of those Superman roundtables in the Triangle era would serve him well.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean he's super well respected. That's not a bad choice. I would be willing to give Dan a try. I wonder if he'd want to do it.
I agree.
Yeah, it's funny, we keep mentioning all these names, and it's like, yeah, I don't know if they want that job.
Yeah.
Well, what I find
interesting about our conversation is that it's supposed to be about, you know, this book right here, the shiny book, Death Metal. But it's turned into, DC needs to figure their shit out.
Because that book is symptomatic of exactly what, you know, this conversation is symptomatic of exactly what needs to change in DC.
Is my point, exactly.
Yeah. But we're going to wrap up. We're over an hour and a half here. So we'll give our final thoughts on Death Metal. But one more thought about editorial at DC. And like Manny mentioned, we're throwing out all these names, and then, you know, some based on the fact that we know them personally and just get a sense that they wouldn't really like the job. It just goes to show what a thankless job it is. And again, I want to give credit to Dan for doing it for so long. Because here's the thing. It's like being a football coach or a baseball manager. When things go wrong, you get way more of the blame than you should. And when things go right, you don't really get much of the credit. And Dan always understood that. He always understood that, and you even saw it when he left, when he finally left DC. You saw so many creators echoing exactly what I'm saying. They would say, Dan was there to take the bullet for you. He would take the blame even if it wasn't his fault, and he would always tell you, I'm doing that because that's my job. That's my job as a publisher is to take the heat. And then, you know, when things are going well, he's always, you know, deflecting and putting giving the credit to the creators. So it's that kind of job, and it's what makes Dan a really special guy, and one of the things I love about him. And you got to have that. You got to have that passion. You got to be willing to do that. And very, very thankless job. So, but to wrap up here, Dark Knight Metal, Death Metal, I'm, like I said, 7.5 out of 10, based on the potential and based on those, based on that one page, man. I give that one page so much credit for me really enjoying the book. Seeing the Batman Who Laughs get his, and the fact that Wonder Woman has an invisible chainsaw of justice. That was pretty awesome. I did enjoy the Batman. I did enjoy Batman with the Black Lantern ring and Jonah Hex leading the undead army. That was great as well. And then, again, and this goes back to potential, you know, Wally West there still supposedly has the powers of Dr. Manhattan, obviously not fully. Not sure how he's off the Mobius chair. Not sure what happened between the end even after the end of Flash Forward. We saw that story in Flash 750, which had the Fugonaut telling him, hey, you know, we need to save the universe, multiverse, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, I got this. So what happened between there and him being captured? I don't know. Guess we'll see. So final thoughts, Knight.
I mean, I give it a generous 4 out of 10. I think that's me being kind of kind about it.
I couldn't even talk you into another half point, huh? You're sticking with your 4.
No, and that, again, that's already being generous, bro. I think I had told Boom when I first came out with it, he's like, so what would you give it? And at first I was like 3.5, and then I gave it a 4 on my review. And I was like, I'll be generous to good old Scotty and Greg. Also, I love Jonathan Glapion, the inker. So it's like, this is for you, bud. Dark Knight's Metal is, for a lack of better words, an absolute disaster. I don't like it. I don't like the implications that it has. I think that the 4 mostly comes from Greg Capullo's art and his masterful understanding of page layout and camera angles that make the book feel so dynamic. You know, I, and again, one of my biggest complaints that was in my review of Death Metal was that because Scott Snyder is busy telling us all of these things, I'm actually way more interested in the things that happened before Death Metal even took place. I'm way more interested in that war that the Justice League lost after they entered the gate of the Quintessence, much more so than what we actually got. And I think that, like, when you are able to detract the reader from the actual story and the stuff that's supposed to be just kind of expository information, I think you've really, really effed up. And again, like, for me, the most exciting moment was Batman with a Black Lantern ring, and he just uses it and runs the fuck away. So, you know, it has its moments. The concepts at times are very cool. Like, I like the idea of connective energy versus crisis energy. It's an interesting take. It's broad. It's obviously going to have some huge implications going forward. I do fear Scott Snyder's ability to execute, as he has, in my book, failed to execute pretty much for the last 4 years or so. But I mean, and ultimately, to be honest with you, I'm not going to give this book any more chances. I actually didn't even buy issue one. I got a review copy, a press preview copy, and I don't even think I want to spend the time to read the book, to be quite frank with you, just because I've done my work of supporting as much of Scott and Greg as I could, just because I had such fond memories of the stories that came before. But I am very much on the train that if you don't like a book, you don't buy it, because otherwise you're telling them that you like it with your money. And the only way to get at least the atmosphere around those books or that type of book to end is to not buy it. So as a general thing, if you love a book, buy the shit out of it. If you don't like a book, don't buy it for fear of missing out. That's how comics industry gets you. And it gives the bad message that you like a book because you're buying it, even if you don't like it. I have constant bit of bickering with my frequent collaborator, Comic Boom, about it all the time. And it is a war that will never cease. But not a huge fan of Dark Knight's Death Metal. But, you know, if you like it, you like it, and all the power to you.
Yeah, but I mean, for most people, they don't get press copies. So if they want to read the first issue, they have to buy it.
Well, but after that, they can stop.
After that, they can stop. So let me ask you this. You're probably going to get a press review copy for issue two. Are you going to read it?
No, I'm done.
Wow.
So
I'm done.
How are you going to know if it gets better? Maybe it improves.
Because it shouldn't have taken 80 issues of comics between everything that's led up to this to get good. And I say that honestly as somebody who was in on the original Metal up until about issue 3. Like, I actually enjoyed it.
Yeah, till it got
Yeah, and at this point, time is valuable. I don't feel like devoting my time and my energy and my frustration to something that has been on a trend of consistent mediocrity, to be honest with you. And also, just as somebody who aspires to create, I would much rather spend my time reading books that I can learn from and become at least conceptually a better writer or a better editor. And as much as it is nice to kind of flex the critical brain power and pick something apart, and I also just frankly, I get tired of reading stuff that I don't like, you know. And if, you know, God forbid, at the end of the series, you know, I mean, Jace, you obviously know my taste. Boom knows my taste. If you guys are like, Dark Knight, I know you hate it up until this point, but I think you are going to love this, then I'll read it. And if it is, I'll be like, well, this is great. But even then, if, you know, between all the Metal tie-ins, No Justice, Justice League, this, like, we'll have upwards of 70-something, maybe 80 issues of comics. And if the next 6, right, because this is a 7-issue series, are great, And you know, for good measure, I'll give Scott Snyder another maybe 4 or 5 quality issues. That's 11 out of 80 or so books. It's not a great record. So
yeah, I mean, I don't plan on reading a lot of the tie-in stuff either. And yeah, I mean, the other part of it is, at some point, if this is the true new backbone of the DC universe, you may have to go back and read it just to see what, you know, as a, you know, just to know where the universe is headed.
Yeah, or I can, like, watch reviews from you and Comic Boom and piece it together. Save myself the time and support some friends.
That's true as well. But yeah, I will say, I'm not sure where I mean, I love Scott and I love his early work, but I'm not sure what.
Oh wait, wrong arm. I have a Court of the Owls tattoo, bro. I love Scott. I love Greg. I love their work. But Scott inspired me to want to become a comic book writer. And that's honestly, and I said this in my review, that's honestly why I hold him accountable for in my view, the declining quality of his work, because I know what he's capable of. I know what his toolbox is. And the fact that he's not playing in his toolbox, but he's arguably making mistakes that he never did before. It's frustrating. And I'm not going to not call him on it. And it doesn't mean that I don't absolutely love Scott. You know, you've talked about it before. He is absolutely incredible to his fans. And that's something that I'll always be grateful for. You know, I remember, I don't know if you saw this thread, but when Death Metal came out, I posted this old picture, dude, when I was like 18, 19, and I met Scott Snyder for the first time. My legs were literally shaking, bro. Like, I was so freaking nervous to meet this guy, and he was just the sweetest, most humble dude. And I have all the respect in the world for him. But with that being said, I absolutely refuse to read his books through rose-colored glasses. You know, I feel like I owe him the respect of being honest and upfront without being a jackass about it. Although I feel like I can often come off a little bit like a jackass.
Yeah, I think the best thing he's written in the last 3 years is Justice League number one.
I think Justice League 25 was pretty good.
Number one was just, it blew me away. I was expecting a transcendent series. And while I think the series is good, I don't think it lived up to the potential that I was hoping for and what I saw. I mean, issue one of Justice League, it felt like issue one of Crisis on Infinite Earths to me. Like, that's how important it felt. And narratively, I just, and I don't know, maybe it's just because he had so much time to write it and perfect it. And then immediately issue two came out. It just felt like it was still good, but I went from just, you know, like I'd say a 9 out of 10. Or not even a 9.5. I mean, issue one was so good, and then issue two came out, and immediately I was like, "Is this the same guy?" I mean, again, bro, still good, but yeah, it was.
It's funny that you say that, because those were two of like the first books that I had ever reviewed on my channel, and it was back when I think I was even less critical than I am now, and I actually gave, I think, issue one like either like a 9 or a 9.2, and I did issue two and I was like, yeah, this is like a 7.5.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's funny that you mentioned that. I feel the same way.
All right, Manny, last thoughts on Death Metal.
The book is a mirror of what DC is right now. And it's, you know, just disappointing, just because there's too many ideas going on. Too many doors they're trying to close in order to move forward. And, you know, they had to put it all in at some event, and it just seems like that's what this was. With that being said, I do love the idea of it being a Wonder Woman-led book, and there were some cool moments, like in any other book. I am 100% glad that the Batman Who Laughs is gone. I put that in quotation. And so... I do look forward to seeing what they do in the next issue or two. I usually won't necessarily be done with the book until issue three. You get a couple, you know, you get a baseball one, strike two, and then strike three. But again, at the end of the day, it's going to be hard not to finish the series, especially if it's going to lead into the new DC, whatever they decide to call it. Going forward, it might be something that we just have to labor through, because even if I tried to explain one of the ideas of what's going on, it's already overwhelming. Like, I mean, I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed all the other stories, but trying to put them all together, that's tough.
Yeah, they have maybe bitten off more than they can chew. So, all right, well, we've definitely chewed this one to death, Death Metal, and DC editorial talk, and a little talk of the comic book industry in general. So thanks for listening, as always, everybody. Thanks to Dark Knight Nation for joining Manny and I, and we'll talk to you next time. You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.